Hello, and welcome to this audio edition of Philip Huscher's program notes for upcoming concerts by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. I'm Rich Caparella, and concerts by the CSO on Thursday, May 2nd and Saturday, May 4th feature guest conductor Elim Chan and organ soloist Paul Jacobs. On the program, Carl Maria von Weber's overture to his opera Der Freischütz, The Free Shooter, Toccata Festiva by Samuel Barber, a work with organ, and after intermission, Scheherazade by Rimsky-Korsakov. Concertmaster Robert Chen will provide the violin solos. Here are Philip Huscher's program notes on Samuel Barber's Toccata Festiva, a work lasting about 13 minutes. At the age of 14, Samuel Barber became a member of the charter class at the new Curtis Institute of Music. He had known he wanted to be a composer since he was 9 years old when he informed his parents of his career choice by letter. It ends, "I was meant to be a composer, and I will be, I am sure. I ask you one more time, don't ask me to try to forget this unpleasant thing and go and play football." At Curtis, he studied conducting briefly with Fritz Reiner. He became music director of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra in 1953, and Reiner said he had no talent on the podium. Several of his student compositions, however, were the work of an advanced composer, and a few, including Dover Beach and the Cello Sonata, have won permanent places in the repertory. Success came early to Barber. He was only 23 when the Philadelphia Orchestra gave the world premiere of his first orchestral score, the overture to The School for Scandal. His next, Music for a Scene from Shelley, was introduced by the New York Philharmonic 2 years later. In 1937, his Symphony No. 1 was the first music by an American to be performed at the Salzburg Festival. Later, Barber's Vanessa was the first American opera to be staged there. Barber's music was performed and championed by some of the most celebrated figures of his day. Vladimir Horowitz introduced the Piano Sonata, Arturo Toscanini the first essay for orchestra and the famous Adagio for strings. Leontine Price regularly sang many of his songs. Barber wrote Knoxville Summer of 1915 for Eleanor Stieber and his ballet Medea for Martha Graham. For many years, Barber's career was marked by continued popular and critical success, international acclaim, and important honors, including two Pulitzer Prizes, the first for Vanessa in 1958. This Toccata Festiva was commissioned in 1960 by Mary Curtis Bach, who founded the Curtis Institute that boasted the young Barber as one of its first-year students. The occasion was the dedication of a new pipe organ she had decided, spur of the moment, to give to the Philadelphia Orchestra. When she phoned music director Eugene Ormaty with the news of her gift, the conductor, away on tour, blurted out, "Do you know how much it will cost?" To which she reportedly replied, "Don't worry about that." Her first husband, Edward Bach, was one of the founders of the orchestra. He helped to establish its endowment and anonymously covered the annual deficit for many years. She took an interest in Barber's talent before he even graduated from her institute, later introduced him to the publishing house of G. Schirmer, and continued to help him in many ways, professionally and personally. He spent many summers in one of the Rockport, Maine cottages the Box provided for Curtis graduates. The Toccata Festiva for the new Philadelphia organ was then something of a family affair. As a result, Barber refused to accept Bach's commissioning fee, reportedly $2,000. The new organ, then the largest portable pipe organ in the world, was built by the Aeolian Skinner Company of Boston and cost $250,000. It was a grand and showy instrument, a lordly example in the royal tradition, according to the makers, and Barber wrote something appropriately brilliant to showcase it. It was Philadelphia's first concert hall organ, other than the one at Wanamaker's department store. Barber's first paying job had been as organist in his family's church. He was fired for refusing to hold fermatas because they didn't appear in the printed music, and he had written for the instrument before. The new Toccata, inspired by those of J.S. Bach, is a virtuoso display piece for both organ and orchestra. Like its Baroque forerunners, it's a fantasia in many sections, with most of its material generated by the opening measures. It begins with a grand fanfare for all, and then moves through more lyrical sections toward a fast and joyous passage that climaxes in a frenzied cadenza to be played on the organ pedals alone, a technical tour de force that sent Barber to consult with his friend, organist and conductor Thomas Schippers, to make sure it could be performed. It can, but, quote, with flying feet, unquote, as the press noted at the premiere. From there, the music builds over pulsating timpani to the rafter-raising conclusion. Program notes by Philip Huscher on Toccata Festiva by Samuel Barber. And now, on to Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade Symphonic Suite, the performance time around 48 minutes. As a boy, Rimsky-Korsakov yearned to see the world, a desire fueled by his restricted upbringing. He had left his hometown only three times by the time he was 12, and by the letters his older brother, Voin, sent from the Far East, where he was serving in the Navy. Young Nikolai fell in love with a sea he had never seen. He devoured books about it, memorized nautical terms, and even rigged up a model brig. Like many of his ancestors, and in obvious emulation of his brother, he set his heart on a career in the Navy. But at the age of 17, when his piano teacher introduced him to Balakirev, Cui, and Mussorgsky, he could no longer deny that the pull of music also was strong. By the time he graduated from the College of Naval Cadets in 1856 and was due to set sail on the Almaz for a 30-month cruise, he confessed that he wanted to be a musician instead of a sailor. Although the ship took him to many distant ports, including New York City and Rio de Janeiro, Rimsky-Korsakov rarely traveled far from home once that voyage was completed, settling instead for the world of his imagination, which he depicted in the fiction of his undeniably potent and atmospheric music. Rimsky-Korsakov first tried to capture the music of the Orient with his Antar Symphony. Having no first-hand experience, he borrowed a French volume of Arab melodies collected in Algiers from his friend Alexander Borodin. He was particularly proud of composing a melody for Antar with florid Oriental embellishments, and later boasted that the abundant use of Oriental themes lent my composition an odd turn of its own, hardly in wide use until then. Within the decade, however, Rimsky-Korsakov was to hear Oriental music for himself. Early in July 1874, Rimsky-Korsakov took his wife and young child to Sevastopol on the southern coast of Crimea, across the Black Sea from Constantinople, now Istanbul. From there, they traveled to the town of Bakhchisarai, where he marveled at the coffee houses, the shouts of its vendors, the chanting of the muezzins on the minarets, the service in the mosques, and the Oriental music. Rimsky was intoxicated by the sounds of this otherworldly place. It was while hearing the gypsy musicians of Bakhchisarai that I first became acquainted with Oriental music in its natural state, and I believe I caught the main feature of its character, he later reported in My Musical Life. Music filled the streets from morning till night. In front of every coffee house, there was continual playing and singing, he wrote. But 7 years later, when he returned to Bakhchisarai, he was stunned to discover that the authorities had cleaned up the streets, and the seductive sounds of the town remained a distant memory. Perhaps hoping to experience some of the local color the place now denied him, he sailed on to Constantinople, where he stayed 3 days before returning home. In February 1887, Alexander Borodin died. Rimsky-Korsakov was devastated at the loss of his friend and colleague. He didn't sleep at all after hearing the news. And within days, he decided to put his own work aside in order to complete Borodin's famously unfinished opera, Prince Igor. Sometime the following winter, while he was immersed in Borodin's world of Polotsian chiefs, harem girls, and Turkish invaders, Rimsky-Korsakov conceived his own Oriental fantasy, an orchestral work inspired by the Arabian Nights, a collection of Arabic, Persian, and Indian tales that had held an enormous, almost uncanny fascination for many cultures since the 9th century. The Arabian Nights had circulated throughout the West in Antoine Galland's French translation since the early 18th century. Scheherazade, as he came to call the work, was composed that summer. Scheherazade consisted of separate, unconnected episodes and pictures, as the composer put it, from the Arabian Nights. Snapshots, in other words, of a world he never knew. Scheherazade is a triumph of imagination over experience. It's a feast of sumptuous colors and brilliant instrumental effects by the man, after all, who literally wrote the book on orchestration, and it quickly became a favorite romantic showpiece and a landmark in the history of descriptive music. Rimsky-Korsakov prefaced the score with a brief reminder of the premise behind the world's first great serial story. To subvert the Sultan Shahryar's vow to kill each of his wives after the first night, the Sultana, Scheherazade, spins an intricate web of to-be-continued tales, one per night for 1,001 nights, ultimately fascinating and winning over the Sultan. By the time he wrote his autobiography, Rimsky-Korsakov shied away from a literal programmatic reading of the score, denying that it depicted actual characters and episodes from the Arabian Nights. In the majority of cases, all these seeming leitmotifs are nothing but purely musical material, the themes for symphonic development, he wrote. Originally, he claimed he hadn't even planned to give the four movements titles beyond the musical labels prelude, ballade, adagio, and finale. His student, Liadov, convinced him otherwise. The programmatic names he finally chose, however, don't refer to specific tales in the Arabian Nights, but to general scenes. Sinbad sailing the sea, a festival in Baghdad, a ship being dashed against the rocks. Rimsky-Korsakov decided to omit the titles in the second edition of the score. He conceded that the violin solo was meant to delineate Scheherazade as she tells her wondrous tales to the stern Sultan, but the imposing theme with which the score begins wasn't reserved specifically for the Sultan. In composing Scheherazade, I meant these hints to direct only slightly the listener's fancy on the path that my own fancy had traveled, and to leave the more minute and particular conceptions to the will and mood of each, Rimsky-Korsakov later wrote. All I wanted was that the hearer, if he liked the piece as symphonic music, should carry away the impression that it is undoubtedly an Oriental narrative of numerous and varied fairy tale marvels, and not merely four pieces played one after the other and based on themes common to all four. Rimsky-Korsakov's genius is for an art of illusion. It has nothing to do with the precise, note-specific observation of a latter-day ethnomusicologist. One day of sightseeing in Bakhchisarai was sufficient for his purposes to capture the main feature of Oriental music. He sought to depict the Orient of people's dreams, and that's why he called the work Scheherazade, because this name and the title, The Arabian Nights, connote in everyone's mind the East and fairy tales. With this score, which immediately became a favorite of European and American armchair travelers, Rimsky-Korsakov ensured the power of that identification for years to come. Program notes by Philip Huscher on Scheherazade by Rimsky-Korsakov. My name is Rich Caparella. Thanks for listening.